Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told, and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. This is Fanny Crawford.
And this is Stassi Okowski.
And today is January 9th, 2023. Our theme today is Tales of Treasure, Love, and Loss. And we're glad you're here to hear our stories.
Yes.
I want to thank Andy Offit Irwin for opening our show this morning, as he does every Monday with his original work, Tarry Here. I just love to hear Andy sing that song. I hope our listeners
Just yesterday, after watching a dull football game for a while, I thought I need something to put me in a better mood. So I went to talltales.enlightenedradio.org and listened to our show from last week.
Did you? What did you think?
I liked it very much. I thought my voice sounded, at first I thought, whoa, that's me? which I found strange. But then as I listened, I said, yeah, I don't get to hear me often that way. I think that's an interesting thing about people. A lot of people don't realize that. And I've heard people say it in the past, that you don't really recognize your own voice all the time. If it's in a different place.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
You know, like speaking to your wife or your husband or your friends or something, you know what you sound like. But then when you hear your voice that's been recorded in a different environment or something, it's like, huh, I didn't know I sounded that way. So anyway, I'm easily surprised by so many things.
You know, well, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing.
No, I think it's a great thing because I'm as old as I am. I love being surprised by new things. I know some people who think that once you get to be my age, you've seen everything you can and heard everything you can. So you might as well just, you know, pull the covers up over your head and say goodnight.
Well, not yet. We have a show to do.
No, of course not. No, I got out of bed right away this morning. First thing, everything's clicking fine. The sun is out. Coffee is good. Coffee's good every morning. My darling wife makes coffee for us every single day, and lots of days, especially like on a Monday when we're doing the show. She comes into the room where I sit to do this and puts my coffee right next to me.
She is a darling.
I know.
No doubt about
that. Spoiled baby.
And you are. That's right. I will agree with that.
Yeah. And that's how it should be.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, well, I try to spoil her too, but I don't do as good a job as she does.
Well, while you're thinking about that, how about we talk about the Speak Story series? To start?
It's going to start February 14th, Valentine's Day, with Priscilla Howell, a very good storyteller, someone I've heard in person, and it's been a number of years since she appeared at my festival in Arkansas, and I heard on last week's show how I described her telling the same story, a short story in English, and then told it in another language. I'm sorry to say I've forgotten what the language was, but I think it was from the Baltic area or, you know, a Germanic language, I think. And it was equally pleasant to hear it in a different language, because all of her hand motions and body movements and everything we had just heard the story in English, and I think the entire audience under the tent really appreciated that, because it wasn't long enough to get boring, and the story had been very interesting and fun, and so we could see the same kind of, we could see the parallel, even though it was a different language, and I mm-hmm. thought that was unique. So anyway, starting on February 14th, Speak will be beginning their 11th season, and I should say our 11th season, because I'm part of that. A little tiny part, but that's okay. Anyway, Priscilla Howe will open up our season. And then the next month, Connie Reagan Blake will be here. And I don't think it makes any sense to list all the people that will be here, just because who wants to hear me blather a bunch of names?
Our listeners can go to Speak Story Series.
Right, speakstoryseries.com, and that's on that they could get their season tickets, which some of us already have. And
one of us does not, but will.
Yes, I know. And I'm sure Carolyn Rodas, who keeps track of this, of our ticket sales and everything. And I'm sure she's anxiously awaiting to see your name pop up. Because she keeps a strict, boy, she keeps a good record of, you know, she probably could tell you what date some person got a season ticket in the last 3 years. You know what I mean? Close record. I don't know. She keeps very good records about, you know, she can tell you for like now at the beginning of the season, she'll be able to tell, you know, well, we have 37 season tickets sold. Now we have 42. Now we have, you know, and every year she wants to get more and more season tickets, which makes sense. And season tickets are good for either the Tuesday, second Tuesday of the month, or the day after that. That next day is a Wednesday, because the storytellers will be here in person at the Opera House in Shepherdstown, and we'll do two performances. One on Tuesday and one on Wednesday. And also, the Tuesday performance will be sent out by Zoom. So if you get a season ticket, you can get a season ticket for Zoom. You can get a season ticket for the Tuesday performance. If you want to see both the Tuesday and the Wednesday performance, you'll have to buy a separate ticket for the Wednesday performance, because that's not included in the season. The picture changed. And anyway, I was just shocked because the picture of Fanny disappeared from my screen.
Huh, is it still there?
Now it is.
That's weird.
You're back.
Okay. I was thinking you have two fairy tales this morning. Is that right?
I do. I have, and these came from when we talked about, of course, every week when we talk, I'm always looking for places to find stories either that I love or that I've written or that I've not told lately. And I came across Best Loved Stories Told at the National Storytelling Festival, a book. I have two copies of this book, and they're years and years apart, which I think is neat. At first, when I picked up the second copy that I bought at the festival many years ago, I thought, wow, they printed that book again. Except it's not. It's a new book. And, of course, I have some favorites. And I'm sure you know that. And I absolutely wanted to tell this story, because when I... anytime I went to Jonesboro, and I've been there about a dozen times, one of the persons that I absolutely would not miss, if I went all the way to Jonesboro and for some reason they said you can only see one person this time, I would have picked Catherine Windham. She was absolutely the person I loved listening to, And I always, after the first time I heard her, I made it a point always to go to the front of the tent afterwards and thank her in person and tell, say, Miss Catherine, I loved your stories. And she was always very kind. And at one of the festivals, we had a great discussion about writing letters. And she was so pleased that I told her about me and my my very best friend as a who was a teacher, same on the same faculty for many years, but over a period of 46 years, we were very close. We did theater together and that and eventually wound up living hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles apart. But we kept up our friendship by writing letters. We did not talk on the phone, I think maybe three times in all those years. But we wrote letters, and I have two large binders full of letters from Jay, who passed away in, I think it was 2015. And Terry and I went to Florida and spent, saw him each of his last 5 days with us. He was in hospice care. And I did one of the strangest things I've ever gotten to do in my life. On the second day we were there, the nurse reminded me that even though Jay was medicated and was going to die soon, he probably could still hear. And so she suggested that you should, she knew some of our history together. She said, why don't you tell them some stories? And so I sat next to my friend's bed and I told them the stories I was going to be telling that coming weekend at a performance when I returned to our home area. And for a few minutes, it felt strange, but after a while, just the strangeness disappeared and I just told stories to my dear friend. And it was a great experience.
That's a wonderful story.
Yeah. I hope that happens to me. You know, maybe when I'm in hospice, you'll come and tell me some stories.
Maybe I will.
That would be fun. That would be fun. Okay, so here's the story. The title is The Hole That Will Not Stay Filled by Catherine Wyndham. Nobody has ever actually seen the ghost of Bill Skeeto, but people going along the road from Newton, near where the old bridge crossed the Chattahoochee River, can tell that the ghost has been here. Invariably, the hole under the tree where Skeeto was hanged is clean as if a brush broom or a pine top had swept it out. Even if the hole is heaped high with the dirt during the day, the dirt disappears during the night, and the next morning the hole is there again. Bill Skeeto, whose ghost is believed to keep the hole cleaned out, was born in Madrid, Spain, on June 8, 1818. When he was just a little lad, he came with his father to Dale County and settled near Newton, a small town in Wiregrass section of Alabama. There were not many Spaniards in that part of the country, and some people were suspicious of foreigners. But Bill was a good boy who won the respect of his neighbors, and when he grew up, he became a Methodist minister. After he entered the ministry, Skeeto became known as the Bible reading preacher from Spain, and he was invited to preach at churches throughout the area. He was made pastor of a log cabin Methodist church at Newton, and he was a kind pastor as well as a powerful preacher. It was while he was preaching at Newton that he met and married an attractive girl, and the two built a home in the community. When the Civil War began in 1861, Skeeto was one of the first men from his county to join the Confederate Army. He fought bravely for 3 years in the thick of many battles, almost miraculously escaping serious injury, Then in the fall of 1864, he received a message that his wife was very sick. Having come from a country so far away from Alabama, Skeeto had no relatives to turn to for help. His wife didn't have any close relatives either, at least none whom Skeeto felt he could ask to stay with her in Newton to nurse her. He decided that the only thing he could do was hire a substitute to take his place in the army so that he could go home and take care of his wife. Now, it wasn't at all unusual for Confederate soldiers to pay other men to fight in their place during times of personal emergency. The asking price for a substitute was about $1,000, a lot of money for a rural Methodist minister turned soldier. But somehow, Skeeto managed to escape to scrape up the needed cash. As soon as his substitute reported for duty, Skeeto jumped on his horse and headed for Newton, making the trip back home in near record time. His wife was so glad to see her husband, so relieved to have him home, that she began to improve immediately. But her long illness had left her weak and frail, and Skeeto felt he should stay with her until she regained her strength. The threat of defeat hung heavily over the South in 1864, and the Confederacy was in desperate need of every soldier it could get. Under the circumstances, Skeeto's prolonged stay at home began to arouse some resentment and suspicion among the locals. A few of his neighbors who knew Skeeto was a foreigner began to wonder if he might not be a traitor as well. At Newton, a number of men had organized themselves to round up and punish deserters. They called themselves Captain Brer's Home Guard. Some people had made accusations that the guard had been organized for the purpose of keeping its members safe at home while other men were fighting for the South. But the unit's defenders said its members were really too old or infirm to serve in the military forces and that they performed a commendable service for the Confederacy. In any event, the guard heard about Skeeto's return from the army, came to the conclusion that he was a traitor, made plans to ambush him and give him a deserter's punishment. On the evening of December 3rd, 1864, members of the Home Guard gathered at the foot of the bridge on the west side of the Choctawhatchee River to waylay their victim. When Skeeto appeared, two men engaged him in conversation, and Skeeto responded gratefully to their apparent gesture of friendship. He answered their questions about his wife's health and even showed them the medicine he had gone to town to purchase for her. As they talked, the other men who had been hiding in a thicket of huckleberry bushes crept up behind Skeeto, slipped a noose of new rope around his neck. Skeeto was a big, strong man, but he had been treacherously surprised. Although he struggled valiantly to escape, it was to no purpose. His captors pinioned his arms to his back by a tight cord and tied his feet together. Then they shoved him to the ground and took turns kicking him as they forced him to crawl in the deep sand. Tiring of this sport and wishing to get on with the punishment they had planned, the members of this military court threw Skeeto into a buggy and maneuvered the vehicle to a spot underneath a stout limb, jutting out from the south side of a big post oak tree. This was to be Skeeto's hanging tree. At that moment, Wesley Dowling, who knew and admired Skeeto, came down the road. When he saw what was happening, he stopped and began to beg the home guard to give their captive a fair trial. Instead of listening to his plea, one of the men gave Dowling a hard cuff and threatened to hang him too if he interfered further. Alarmed lest other passersby should see what they were up to, the men in the guard hastened in their preparations for Skeeto's hanging. They threw the rope over the limb and then asked Skeeto if he had any last words. He replied that he would like to pray. That made the men a little uneasy, but how could they refuse to let a man have a final prayer, particularly if he was a preacher? So they granted his request. But instead of praying for himself, as they had expected, Skeeto prayed for his tormentor. "Forgive them, Lord. Please forgive them," he prayed. This so infuriated the home guard that even before the doomed man had finished praying, Captain Brer gave a sharp lash of his whip to the rump of the red horse hitched to the buggy. The frightened animal plunged forward, jerking Skeeto out of the buggy. But Skeeto's neck wasn't broken, making the hurried plans for the hanging. Home guard members hadn't allowed for their victim's height and size. Skeeto was tall and his frame was not spare, so the limb to which the rope was tied bent under his weight when his toes touched the ground. Quickly, George Eccles, a cripple, grabbed his crutch and used it to dig a hole in sandy soil under Skeeto's feet so that his toes would not touch the ground and his body would swing from the rope. Finally, the noose tightened and did its deadly work. News of what was happening near the bridge reached Newton too late for the minister's friends to save his life, but several men went to the spot, took Skeeto's body down from the tree, and laid it out in a cotton house across the road. He was later buried in the graveyard at Mount Carmel Church, where his tombstone may be seen today. But the story of Bill Skeeto did not end with his burial. The six men who had hanged him were never able to sleep peacefully at night. Not one of them would walk alone outside after dark. Though they locked their doors and barred their windows, they were tormented by dread and fear, and each one of the six in his turn met a violent death. One was killed on horseback when a limb from a post oak tree, same kind of tree on which Skeeto was hung, fell on him. It was a still day with not a breath of wind stirring, but the heavy limb fell just as the rider passed beneath the tree. Another member of the lynch mob was killed when thrown from a runaway mule that unaccountably took fright on a quiet, open stretch of road. A third member of the group was struck by lightning, and one was found dead in a deep swamp. The other two also met their death in mysterious ways. Almost immediately after the hanging, curious people began visiting the site of the tragedy. As time went by, they observed that the hole dug by the crutch did not fill up as an ordinary hole would have, and people whispered that Skeeto's ghost was returning to the spot to keep the hole clean. Some years later, two men who were part of a crew that was building a new bridge over the river decided to camp on the spot where Skeeto had died. They did not believe in ghosts, so they filled up the hole and pitched their tent over it. The braver of the two men put his bedroll directly over the freshly filled hole, and they spent a fairly comfortable night. The next morning, they broke camp. The braver man picked up his bedroll and found to his amazement that the hole was there again, although he had filled it up himself and lain on it all night long. The hanging oak isn't there anymore, but the hole still is. It's about 30 inches wide at the top, slopes to a depth of about 8 inches. Three young pine trees now grow close to the hole, but even their needles do not remain in it. Something sweeps them away, leaving the hole as clean and as empty as it was the day an innocent man was hanged there. And here's a little post afterwards about Catherine Windham of Selma, Alabama, who has collected Southern tales, including true ghost stories for more than 50 years. And it's a shame Catherine has passed, but every time I ever went to the storytelling festival, it was my pleasure to see Catherine Windham and to stop after hearing her stories and pass the time of day with her. She was absolutely my favorite storyteller at Jonesboro.
Yeah, she was. I never heard her in person. I did hear that story.
Really?
On YouTube, cool. but not. I never heard her in person. So It's very good of you to resurrect that one and share it with us. And lots of interesting details and
historic. I just always loved her voice, and she told so many nice stories about her father. And she also was just so pleasant, a very pleasant person, and I loved hearing her voice.
I love listening to her as well. on recordings, of course, since I didn't hear her in person. You've been listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Martinsburg, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland. Our theme today is stories, tales of treasure, love, and loss. And we have some interesting stories going on here. And yes, there's more to come.
All right. So are you going to tell a story?
I am going to tell a story. And if you can give me feedback on this tale, anything you think is missing or anything you want to hear more of, and what do you think are the best parts of the story? If I'm going to revise it forward, give me some suggestions.
Okay.
There were once two sisters who lived with their mother in a very small house in a clearing on the edge of a great forest. Lily May was a delicate girl, quiet and shy in temperament, but she entertained her sister and mother with fanciful stories she related every evening as they worked stringing bean pods from their garden on long strands of twine to dry in the attic for winter soups, or sat by the fireplace sewing. Ebony Grace, the other sister, sang to the birds in the forest and practiced handstands on the front porch. She was outgoing and lively, spending as much time as possible outside, tending the family's few goats and chickens. Their father died when the girls were very young. Now it was just the three of them in their little family. Their mother worked hard sewing for the townspeople at the edge of the forest and growing much of what the family ate from their small, neat garden. Now that they were no longer very young, nor very little, Lily May and Ebony Grace worked hard too, helping with the garden, collecting their neighbors' mending baskets full of dresses that needed hems let down, work clothes that needed cuffs turned, and carrying all that clothing back to the owners in town once it was all made perfectly new and neat by their mother. The three of them had not much in the world but their small house, the well-tended garden, and trade with the townspeople. That was enough for them. Late one icy cold winter night, as the chimney of the small house puffed out small but regular puffs of fragrant hardwood smoke from the logs those three hard-working women cut and stored under the house all summer and now fed to the small hot iron stove, there came a thumping and a knocking on the front door. Ebony Grace ran to open it. There on the porch was an enormous brown bear. She was a bit put off by the sight of a bear on their front porch, but the bear explained that he had traveled a great distance over several days and nights and wanted only a place by the warm fire out of the wind and sleet. Ebony Grace explained the bear's request to Lily May and their mother, and after proper introductions, they invited the bear in. He lay his great bulk down in front of the fire. Ebony Grace found an old blanket to rub the water and sleet from his heavy coat. Lily May told her newest story about elves lost in the snow, and they all settled down to sleep. In the morning, the bear was eager to be on his way, but the sisters begged him to stay for breakfast. He did, but politely ate only one small bowl of homegrown oatmeal, same as everyone else. The last they saw of the bear that day was his broad brown rump bounding down the path into the forest. But late that night, there came a thumping and a knocking on the cottage door. Ebony Grace ran to open it, and there again was that same enormous brown bear headed back home from his travels and bearing a great basket of nuts, honey, and cheese, his favorite foods, to thank them for their kind hospitality. He lay down by the fire, one leg dry this time, pressed almost on top of Ebony Grace's foot. Lily May provided another elf tail, and they all settled down to sleep. In the morning, there was a bowl of oatmeal for each of them, this time with nuts, honey, and cheese. The last they saw of the bear that day was his broad brown rump disappearing into the forest. But he came back late that night, and the night after that, and the night after that. He returned every night that winter, usually with fine food and drink for breakfast, and then went off every morning to do whatever it is a bear will do on his own in the great forest. All three of the women and the bear seemed to adjust well, even happily, to their new living arrangements. Spring arrived, and then summer. The bear explained he would be leaving them.
Summer is the season for greedy and malicious green trolls to be abroad, waked from winter hibernation, casting about for other people's valuables and treasure to steal.
He said he had not very much in the way of valuables or treasure, but what he had, he wished to keep safe. That very morning he was off, trundling down the path into the forest. Some days later, Lily May and Ebony Grace were walking in the forest, scouting the best springs and pools for watercress for a special surprise tea party for their mother. They happened upon a frightened, blustering troll, his long, wispy, goat-like beard caught in the cracked cleft of a tree. They could hear him wailing and shouting some angry words they'd never heard before and did not know the meaning of, shouting at the tree as he beat upon it with a stout walking stick, cracking the stick, but without much luck in freeing his beard. Together, Lily May and Ebony Grace managed to pull apart the cleft in the tree just enough to pull the troll free. They got no thanks for their trouble. In fact, the troll gave them each a smack on the head for pulling his beard, and a kick to each of their shins for leaving a bit of his beard in the crack. A few days later, hunting for truffles, they came upon the same troll. They recognized his worse for wear, wispy beard, his angry wails and creative curses. This time, he was twisted up in a patch of blackberry brambles, his jacket caught all which ways, arms crisscrossed so that he could not even reach the buttons to wiggle out of the sleeves. This time, fortunately for the troll, Lily May was carrying a small truffle knife in her basket. Together, the two girls were able to cut him out of the jacket. The troll was, if anything, even angrier than last time, accusing them of intentionally loading my buttons in the brambles, destroying my tailored suit. He pushed them hard into the brambles as he ran off. It was more than an hour, and many, many painfully clipped brambles later before they were able to detach themselves. The third meeting, almost a month later, was right upon the path. He came barreling around a blind corner at top speed, which, after all, is not all that fast for anything longer than a quick sprint by a troll, but fast enough to knock the wind out of Lily May as he slammed into her middle section with his head, from watching the ground below him rather than ahead of him as he ran. Lily May and Ebony Grace sat down abruptly in the middle of the path as the troll tripped over both of them, shouting his favorite words as he rolled over and over trying to right himself. Really, they were quite a tangle of short troll legs, bugged out angry troll eyes, longer girl legs, and lots of tousled girl hair. So they were a bit distracted. Troll and girls jumped about a foot as a massive mountain of brown fur came roaring, jaws agape, round the turning in the path. the green troll, began shrieking, screaming his words. As he removed his now empty hands from the inside of the truffle baskets, Lily May and Ebony Grace cowered in fear, not at all sure they recognized the brown-furred, raging animal now towering over them, fangs parted, his hot breath visible in the cool forest air. Only a few feet from their faces, the bear dropped down on 3 feet, using his right front paw and extraordinary supernatural strength to sweep that troll high into the air, catapulting the fiend over trees, over the closest craggy peak, and beyond, far, far out beyond the edge of the forest. The troll was now too far away for Lily May and Ebony Grace to hear his shrieking, but the bear's hearing was better than theirs. He rumbled, a low, self-satisfying rumble. Lily May and Ebony Grace stared at him, wide-eyed. 1 minute, he was an enormous, wild, fur-bound warrior. The next instant, he was a sweating, pardon me, a sweating chainmail-wearing prince, fashionably shod in tall leather boots capped with a leather helmet. The chin strap dangling loosely below his right ear and bearing a broad steel sword by its bejeweled hilt. The troll, one of the last of its kind, possessed of stolen amulets and magical curses, had lusted for the prince's treasure and conspired with a wicked wizard, which he later roasted and ate. Conspired to spell, said Prince, steal his riches and shapeshift him to bearish countenance and habits. Caught at long last by the bear, thrown from the forest, the seat of the wizards and now the troll's stolen power, the troll was helpless. The curse was broken. Ebony Grace, of course, married the bear, Prince. Lily May married his younger brother. And then Ebony Grace and Lily May, often accompanied by the royals, helped their mother renovate and expand the cottage to hold all of them each summer, and eventually convinced their mother to live with them at the royal palace through each winter. And while they may not have lived completely happily ever after, they came very close, generously sharing love, wisdom, treasure, and domiciles with those in need.
Wow, that was really nice. I don't know what happened at two parts, not more like a minute or so apart, I think. Your mouth was moving, but I couldn't hear anything.
Oh my.
And that you had your head kind of tilted. And at first I thought that I had missed what you should be saying. But then I realized I couldn't hear anything, even though your mouth was moving. I don't know. I got so distracted by that. I kept trying to figure out what was going on, and then I got lost.
Oh.
So I think in order to give you feedback, I'm going to have to listen to the recording.
Well, I hope the recording is complete.
I'm guessing that Every once in a while, your connection stops, and I when I listened to last week's recording, I didn't miss a word, but so I'm guessing that the sound recording is fine, but the pic, you know, because we're doing this through Zoom, your picture froze. I don't know. I don't understand all this electronic stuff.
Oh dear.
For a man, supposed to be a man of science here, and all that stuff, but I get puzzled. Anyway, that story was 12 minutes and 35 seconds.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And I did enjoy the story very much.
Well, thanks for listening.
And I'm going to listen to the recording because I want to be able to give you feedback. And I just got so distracted by watching your lips move and not hearing anything that I got thrown off.
And it happened twice.
Yes, and both times it was very short space between them. I don't know what.
Okay, we'll have to investigate.
Okay. So, I guess it's my turn.
It certainly is.
All right. And let's see if I can get to make sure I have my, well, of course, if I had been muted, you would not have been able to hear me. But while you were telling, I had myself muted, which is good because I think I actually said out loud, I wonder why she's just moving her mouth and not saying anything, or something to that. Okay, this next story is titled The Wish Ring, and it's, I don't think it's very long. No. Okay, so here we go. And this is by Martha Holloway. Okay. There once was a young farmer who, in spite of his hard work and honest ways, remained poor. One day, as he was resting from his plowing, eating his lunch of bread and cheese under the shade of a tree, he saw coming down the road an old bent over woman, barely able to put one foot in front of the other. She stared hungrily at the farmer's food. And he said to her, come, old mother, and rest a while. I will share my bread and cheese. She sat and ate and was refreshed. And as she stood to go, she said, because of your kindness, I wish to help you. Walk 2 days till you come to a great fir tree that stands in the forest and overtops all the other trees. If you can hew it down, you will make your fortune. Well, the farmer shouldered his axe and started on his journey at once. Sure enough, after tramping for 2 days, he came to the fir tree and began to chop. The tree began to sway, and just before it fell with a crash, out of its branches dropped a nest that held 2 eggs. The eggs fell to the ground and broke. Out of one darted a young eagle, and out of the other rolled a gold ring. The eagle spread its wings and, soaring upward, cried, "Take the ring. It is a wish ring. Turn it on your finger twice, and whatever you wish shall be fulfilled. But remember, there is but a single wish in the ring. No sooner is that wish granted than the ring loses its power and becomes ordinary. Therefore, consider well what you desire so that you may never have reason to repent your choice." Farmer took the ring, placed it on his finger, and made his way homeward. Toward evening, he reached a town, and as he walked through it, he saw a jeweler sitting in his shop. The jeweler was sitting behind a counter on which lay many costly rings for sale. Curious about what the merchant would say, the value of his new ring was, the farmer asked, "How much do you think this is worth?" The jeweler looked and said, "Ha, not a straw." The farmer laughed. "This ring is of greater value than all the rings in your shop put together. It is a wish ring." The jeweler was a wicked designing man. He said to the farmer, "Why don't you rest from your journey and stay the night with me? Sheltering a man who owns a wish ring will bring me luck." He treated his guest to fair words, fine food, and much wine. And that night, as the farmer lay sound asleep, the wicked jeweler stole the magic ring from his finger, slipped on in its place a common ring that he had made to look like the magic one. As soon as the farmer continued his journey the next morning, the jeweler closed the shop, put up the shutters so that no one could peep in, and bolted the door. Standing in the middle of the room, he turned the ring and cried, "I wish for 1,000,000 gold pieces." No sooner had he said that worth those words than great shining gold pieces came pouring down upon him in a torrent over his head and shoulders. Before he could unbar the door, the weight of the gold crushed him and broke the floor. The jeweler and his money sank through to the cellar. The noise alarmed the neighbors, and they came running over. When they found the man dead under his gold, they exclaimed, "Doubly unfortunate is he whom blessings kill." Wow, what a saying. Afterward, the jeweler's heirs came and divided the property. In the meantime, the farmer reached home in high spirits and showed the ring to his wife. "Henceforth, we shall never be in want. Only we must be very careful to consider well just what we ought to wish." "Well," she said, "suppose we wish for that bit of land that lies between our two fields." "That isn't worthwhile," the husband said. "If we work hard for a year, we'll earn enough money to buy it." So the two worked very hard, and harvest time, they had raised enough of a crop raised a better crop than ever before. They had earned enough money to buy the land, still had a bit to spare. "See," said the man, "we have the land and the wish as well." The wife then said, "We really need a cow and a horse. What would you think of wishing for them?" "Oh, no, let's not waste it on trifles," he said. "We will manage to get the horse and the cow." And in a year's time, they had saved the money for the horse and the cow. Joyfully, the man rubbed his hands. "The wish is saved again, and yet we have what we desire. How lucky are we?" "Yes, dear husband, but there's something we don't have, children. I do long for children. Could we use the wish for such a blessing?" "I too want children. Let's be patient for a while longer and see if the Lord will bless us." That seems a funny thing to wish for children. And the next year, they were overjoyed to have a baby son. And then the year after, 5 more healthy children. Apparently, they figured it out. They didn't need to wish. But now the farmer's wife talked seriously about using the wish at last. "You have slaved and toiled when you might be a gentleman with chests overflowing with gold, or a baron, or even a king." And he answered, "We are still young and life is long. There is only one wish in the ring. And who knows when we may sorely need it. Are we in want of anything? Have we not prospered to all people's astonishment since we possessed the ring? Be reasonable and patient for a while." And that was the end of the matter. It really seemed as if the ring had brought a blessing into the house. The farmer's granaries and barns were full to overflowing, and in the course of a few years, he became a rich man. Still, he worked with his men in the fields as if he too had to earn his daily bread. And so the years went by. Sometimes when they were alone, his wife would remind her husband of the magic ring and suggest many plans. But he always answered that he had plenty of time and that the best thoughts come last. Finally, she stopped speaking of it altogether. To be sure, the farmer looked at the ring and twirled it about as many as 20 times a day, but he was very careful never to wish. After many years had passed, the farmer and his wife had grown old and their wish was still unasked. They were blessed in another way, and on the same night, both of them died peacefully. The weeping children and grandchildren gathered around the two coffins. One daughter wanted to remove the ring from the still hand of her father as a remembrance, but the oldest son said, "Let our father take his ring into the grave." There was always a story, a mystery about it. Our mother often looked at the ring. Perhaps she gave it to him when they were young. So the old farmer was buried with that ring that he had been supposed to be a wish ring and was not. Yet it brought as much good fortune as any heart could desire. What an interesting story.
Yes, we could have a long conversation about the various messages there.
Yeah, a wish ring. In my youth, there were a number of things that I carried, and there is one that I still carry, because I thought it was good luck, and that it would do something for me. One, and no remarks about this one, please. Although if you could say anything you want, of course. I was a Christian Brothers boy. I went to a Christian Brothers school, and the very first day I was there, I was told that I should carry a rosary every day, and I should say the rosary. I was raised Catholic, and I did. And so for many years, from that day on, I was never without a rosary, even in the army. For 3 years, I had that rosary in my pocket. Went through college, always had my rosary. I became a teacher at the same school I had attended. And it was 8 years after my graduation from high school that I became a teacher. I had gone through the army and college. And once at lunch, the principal of that school saw me take my hand out of my pocket. I was getting some change. I wanted to give the person who was working, serving our lunch, a small tip. And I knew I had a bunch of quarters in that pocket. And I also had my rosary. Well, when the principal saw my rosary, he laughed. And he said, "You carry that rosary because you're a student at the Christian Brothers School, and you, how long have you been carrying it?" And I said, "Well, I started the first day I attended this school, and I was 13. Well, on this day, I happened to be 28. I had been teaching there a few years. And he laughed again and said, "That's just an old wives' tale. None of the brothers carry a rosary like that, except maybe the very oldest ones. I'm surprised that you do that." Anyway, that made me feel really bad. I went and talked to our counselor, Brother Paul. We called him Old Brother Paul because there was another Brother Paul who was called Big Brother Paul. And Old Brother Paul explained to me that oftentimes, even though there were things that people carried for years and years and years, it was more of a wish thing than anything else. And that having the rosary in my pocket really wasn't going to make anything better. It was the last day I ever carried a rosary. But I still have that kind of feeling, because in my pocket every day, no matter what kind of clothes I wear, no matter what I'm going to do, on my key ring is my dog tag from the Army. I've had that dog tag since 1959. It has never been away from me. That is a long, long time ago, 63 years. And soon it'll be 64. And I carry that with me because I am proud of my service to my country. For 3 years, I was a young soldier. Luckily, I did not have to worry about being in battle or anything like that because we didn't have any war going on at that particular time. But I think of it as a special item and as if it's something that's very important. If I should die away from my family and someone found my body when they checked my pockets besides some coins and who knows, maybe a cell phone, they'll find my dog tag and they'll know that I had been a member of the armed forces and it was a long time ago. And for some reason that makes me feel very happy.
We should all do things that make us happy.
Yes, so I'm glad you do. I think so. I agree.
Good story. Well, we are out of time.
I see.
And I guess I'm going to end the show with our usual closing words and hope that our listeners enjoyed what they heard today and were entertained. And perhaps maybe inspired by both the stories and our theme, Tales of Treasure, Love, and Loss. This is Fanny Crawford.
And Starcy Okowski.
And we're your co-hosts for the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. We're independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Martinsburg, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland. This Storytelling Hour offers you, our listeners, a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging you, our listening community, to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for
a tribute to the Grateful Dead.